Hello, everybody. It's George from Ireland. So I'm speaking now about the Battle of Bakhmut, which has been going on since August. So here we are, 7 months or so in, and the Russians are going forward just meters a day, and they put so much in that. So I'm reading this from mostly Western sources, claiming that the Russians outnumber the Ukrainians 10 to 1 there. I don't know if that's true. A lot of the Russians are Wagner group fighters, and I say Russians, some of them are actually not Russian citizens. Maybe Tajiks, Kyrgyz, perhaps Belarusians, maybe Serbians, Montenegrins, I don't know, because they've used various other nationalities in Wagner. Nevertheless, Wagner Group would be at least 90% Russian citizens. And so they recruit people from prison. Even a luckless Zambian student who was in Russia, who was caught some cannabis, given a very long prison sentence, and he volunteered to get out of jail. Russia is a sort of carceral state, even if you're outside the prison walls. And unfortunately, he lost his life a couple of months ago in East Ukraine. And the people that Wagner recruits or the Russian army drafts are often not ethnically Russian. They're Russian citizens, but they be Buryat, Yakuts, Chukchi, Tatar, Chechen, Dagestanis, whoever. Ethnic minorities, indigenous ethnic minorities. In Russia, they've got two different words for Ruski-Rusyanin, depending whether you're ethnically Russian or you're a Russian citizen of a different ethnic group. So it's the ethnic minorities, the people who are peripheral, the socially marginal, the poor, they're the ones who are thrown into the conflagration and their lives just thrown away. So the Wagner fighters, perhaps I shouldn't even call them soldiers, often very low grade, no disrespect to them, but often they've had little or no training or very poorly equipped. So the Russian army and Wagner Group are not the same. And then the head of Wagner Group, Yevgeny Prigozhin, Putin's chef, is openly lacerating the Russian army's top brass for cutting him off, the Minister of Defense not answering his phone calls, and his men are very short of ammunition. And I suggest that smacks of some desperation. He's been forced to do that. Remember, he was bragging his troops, Wagner, that they'd taken ground, not the Russian army, that he wanted Bakhmut because he was going to use that because it's got white wine industry and salt mines. But you need human resources. There are no people to do the work, and the city's almost entirely wrecked. But there have been such high casualties. I mean, Western sources have claimed that there are at least five Russian casualties from every Ukrainian casualty. I would take that with a pinch of salt. I've often cited William Howard Russell. I know his name is almost worn out now. War, the first casualty of war is truth. So maybe it's four times more, maybe it's three times more. I don't think anyone disputes that it's more, the Russians are suffering more than the Ukrainians, partly because the Russians are sending forward troops, in these suicidal attacks. And they've got very little ammunition, poor equipment, and all the rest of it. And they've been rushed through basic training. The Ukrainians are well dug in and are increasingly well equipped with these Western arms shipments. Nevertheless, the Ukrainians have sustained significant casualties. Is it too much? But it seems like not. Zelensky was saying a few days ago, he discussed it with the commanders, they're against withdrawal, they're carrying on defending it. That one last road that supplies them, that's being bombarded, but they're holding on. So it's possible the Ukrainians could actually win. Could Russia conclude, this is not worth it? Even if it wins, even if we win, it's a victory of Pyrrhos. Both sides are claiming to inflict hundreds of casualties a day on each side. And of course, I don't believe these inflated figures. There'll be something like that saying, the Ukrainians saying we've inflicted 500 casualties on the Russians today, Russians saying we inflicted 400 casualties on the Ukrainians today. And obviously, these could only be estimates, but I would think that they massage them rather roughly upwards. So I would think it's a dividend of that, not the whole thing. So it seems that the Russians won't back down, and Putin doesn't back down and doesn't retreat, even when that would be the wise decision to do. He's only ever a double down. But there's a possibility he'll change his mind. He did withdraw from Kherson. It was General Sergei Surovikin who convinced him to do so. I think actually the right move to evacuate the city rather than be cut off and have up to 30,000 troops forced to capitulate. What a calamity that would be. And that would be in about a seventh of all the Russian troops in Ukraine, as well as quite a lot of equipment would have been handed over. So that would be more of a shattering blow to Russian morale than this. So there is a slim chance that Russia actually will withdraw. And remember in February, Yevgeny Prigozhin was saying they were going to take the city by the end of by the end of April. He's twice announced they've already taken it. Now he says, well, we're fighting in the streets and we're within a kilometre of the main administrative building. The Ukrainians could counterattack there, push them back. Why are the Ukrainians bothering to hang on? Because Zelensky's publicly said that, which then makes it more difficult to back down and pull out yourself. They might see it as Verdun. They've sucked the Russians into a battle the Russians feel obliged to win, and they can just bleed the Russians white, even though it's actually not that important. It buys them time for more Western armaments to arrive, more of their troops to be trained in Western countries, particularly the United Kingdom, Spain, France, elsewhere. Not just by instructors in those countries, by Canadian, Swedish, Norwegian instructors, and New Zealand instructors are also in the United Kingdom, for instance, training Ukrainian troops. And waiting for the ground to dry out towards the end of April, where they could begin their spring offensive with the Leopard 2 tanks of Germany, the Challenger 2 tanks, even to them those Abrams American tanks, but they probably won't be there till towards the end of this year. So that's why they think they can have some success and maybe push down to the Sea of Azov, break that land bridge between Russia and the Crimean Peninsula, cut off a lot of Russian troops, maybe force them to withdraw or to run up the white flag, things like that. So I think there's a slim chance that Ukraine will win this Battle of Bakhmut. But even if they're forced to pull out, is that really a defeat? I mean, you might say, well, the objective of the battle was to retain control of the city. If they lose control of the city, yeah, it's a defeat. But if you've inflicted several times more casualties on your foe than you've sustained yourself, then that's a success. But Russia has large reservoirs of manpower. While they lack in quality, they can make up for in quantity, a bit like the Second World War. I mean, the German equipment apparently was superior in almost every regard, but there was just far too little of it. Sometimes it was too precious, couldn't withstand extreme heat, extreme cold, you know, thick mud or deep water or whatever. It was the Russian equipment, though it was second rate, it was actually usable. And you couldn't utilize a German tank. It's no good how excellent it is. You know, how fast it can go, how far the range of the gun is, and how whatever accurate that gun is. So I think it's unlikely that Ukraine will win this one, strictly speaking, be pushed out of the city at some point. But, you know, I thought it would have fallen by now, but the Ukrainians, they've always pleasantly surprised their admirers by hanging on longer than anyone thought possible, like at Mariupol. And, you know, as near a draw as the Taiwan, Russia concludes, it's just not worth it. There are these NATO estimates of 200,000 Russian casualties, and maybe they're an overestimate, but I think probably not by very much. But Putin thinks that stringing this out means that, you know, Trump might be back in the White House. All he has to do is wait in 22 months. Trump has publicly said he would end this war now by saying to Putin, yeah, you can keep some of your ill-gotten gains, some of the lands you've illegally seized, yeah, right of conquest, you can have it, and cut off all arms supplies to the Ukrainians so they agree to that. But that wouldn't actually end the war. It would just delay it by a year till Putin thinks he's built up a strength and attack again. But can Putin go on fighting forever? It's estimated Russia's lost about half its tank fleet. You know, they claim to have about 8,000 tanks, and now some of that will be a lie. Getting T-62s out of warehouses. They're called 62 because they were built in the year 1962. Now, not all these tanks are 61 years old. Some of them were built in the late 60s into the 70s, according to that. Then the T-72 came along. But anyway, they're all at least half a century old. And we know the Russians do a very bad job of maintaining these tanks. So these museum pieces will often just be rusted beyond use. So suppose they didn't have 8,000, they had 6,000, and then some of those will be unusable. So their usable tanks, they've lost about half. I'm surprised that, you know, NATO countries don't give Ukraine the missiles to fire to that Ural Vagon Zavod factory near Sverdlovsk and just blow up the tank factory. But so Putin might be running out of tanks, other equipment, as about to repurpose anti-ship missiles to use at land, use these very expensive, what they're called, I forgot how you call them, Jirkan, the Jinkal dagger missiles. Dagger is what it means. And yes, there's going to be another draft this year, but the suffering might be just be too much, especially if someone wants to boost the population. The economic suffering just too much. So, and if he waits almost 2 years, Trump doesn't necessarily come to the House, back into the White House. Looks like Biden will be reelected. If not Biden, would it be Kamala Harris? If the Republicans do win, may well be Ron DeSantis. Probably wouldn't be as bad as Trump for Ukraine. And even Trump, You know, he's like a weather vane. He might actually be pro-Ukraine. He could savage Biden from the other side and say, you know, you weren't tough enough on Putin. You didn't arm him enough. So stringing out the war does not necessarily play to Russia's advantage. I think it probably does, but I'm not certain, because Putin has probably read the Western psychology correctly. Westerners are used to a soft, comfortable life, to high living standards, and will eventually get fed up of paying the cost of this war and say, oh, let's stop the senseless slaughter. Let's cave in and give Putin what he wants, anything for a quiet life. But of course, appeasing Russia is what Western countries have been doing for decades, since the end of the Soviet Union, looking the other way about Moldova, looking the other way about Georgia, looking the other way largely about all these gas attacks in Syria, these assassinations all around the world, the malign activities of Wagner Group supporting terrorists in Libya, and on and on and on, breaking UN sanctions against North Korea, and so forth. Anyway, thank you so much for watching my channel. So please subscribe on Patreon, donate on PayPal. Goodbye.